Unchurned is presented by Update AI.
This move from like super high touch to holy shit, we have so much to do. We can't do it anymore. And I really like the way that you framed it. It's like, you know, CSMs are kind of trained to be the superhero. They're just like, they're always the ones that save the day, right? And I think that's okay within reason. But that transition is a cultural shift that I'm really interested to hear like 6 months from now or a year from now when you kind of come out the other end.
When it's time to articulate your impact, your worth to the organization, it's hard to do that when you're like, I do 15 different things. And they're like, wait, what? You know, versus I do these three things. This is how it influences revenue or GRR. And I can certify like my team is doing work that's appropriate for the hourly rate we're paying for. Not that they're hourly, but you know, if I were to distill their average salaries to hourly rates, like this is work we should be doing with knowledge workers of this caliber. And we owe that to our teams.
We just ignore you for like,
no one's ever ready for this.
I'm making faces at all you guys right now, but you can't see me.
I don't know why you won't come off camera and just blur your background. Because
it's my childhood bedroom.
Yeah, we all want to see your childhood
bedroom.
We want
to know about your childhood, Josh.
Josh, let's talk about your
childhood. On the count of three, I'm going to show my camera for 1 second. And anybody watching on YouTube at this second can see my childhood bedroom. And then it's going to be done. Ready? 1, 2, 3, go.
Oh, the story.
Everyone pick something that you want to talk about. Okay, got it.
That's
okay.
How many pillows.
There. That's my life. That's my life.
There's more than 10 pillows.
There's definitely more than 10 pillows.
Well, you need one for between the knees, right? Because if you don't have
that's
it between the knees.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Are you guys, pregnant? Like,
yes.
Oh, you know, why do you guys need so many pillows?
I have one.
My female friends have a lot of pillows, and I get that. But
hey,
like,
this is not a gendered opinion. Comfort is comfort.
You need that. No, I'm just saying. Like the
hip alignment.
The belly pillows and stuff.
Your hip alignment.
I sleep with a pillow between my knees
I sleep
every
with
night.
One little. This is crazy. Are you guys side sleepers? Is that what's happening?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And then
okay,
I just want to
be
held.
Sleeping on your back.
So I just
want to be held. Okay. So you want to be the little spoon? Got
yeah. I just need a little jetpack. We all just need a little backpack.
Pregnancy pillows for the win.
I'm telling you, I need the pillow that has like the hole. I need the pillow that the arm goes underneath that has the hole with the bed with the hole so that I could lay on my side and. I mean, it's a complication, guys.
That's like the lonely man's pillow.
Yeah, I was going to say, you need a partner.
Happy birthday.
Everybody, it is John's birthday. We're filming this on Monday.
How old are you now?
I am celebrating my 21st birthday for the 21st year in a row, actually. I'm 42.
Yes.
I had to do some math and it made
math
me nervous
whizzes.
Because
I know. Yeah.
Two numbers.
Well, John, happy birthday. You don't act Thank a day you. Older than 27. So
that's all I go for. My 401k also agrees.
Yeah. And then I also wanted to start us off this episode with something different in honor of our guest. And
okay,
I'm really excited. Yeah. No, I'm really excited about our guest. I'm really excited about her company. And so I want to start in the spirit of, we're going to introduce her in a second, but in the spirit of her and her company, I want to start with a communal moment of a deep breath work together, of taking like a breath together. I don't know what I'm trying to run this thing. I've never ran
you
before.
I don't know that
this.
I want to be deep breathing with you all on a Zoom thing or recorded thing that lives in forever.
Okay. Ready? On the count of three, we're all going to take a deep breath and we're going to inhale and exhale.
One.
Two.
Should we go,
with our eyes closed.
Arms up. Like what's it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I'm not closing my eyes. I'm watching all of you.
Thanks, Josh.
Feels good. Feels good. And with that,
I feel like a pro at this.
I'm centered.
I've been introduced to breath work from my current company.
Yes. Yeah. Sarah's like, hey, guys, I'm here. Introduce me already.
This is actually the fastest that we've introduced a guest, by the way.
It actually is. Well, except now we're kind of going to go on another round. Okay, we'll get back to it. Sarah, Parker, welcome to the show.
Josh Schachter.
Sarah Parker is
Founder,
the senior
CEO.
No.
Guys, let's just see how many times we can get in the way of her intro. Sarah is the senior vice president of global customer success, not just North American, global customer success, heads of customer success at BetterUp. BetterUp is a really cool company because I think they're doing just something that everybody needs, which is coaching, personal coaching. And she's got all kinds of different product lines there. And maybe, Sarah, you can explain that a little bit. And I'm sure I'm not doing any justice to a description of your company.
Nope, doesn't sound like you are.
Nope, doesn't to me either. Prior to BetterUp, because she's been there for 6 months. She was a VP of customer success at UiPath, which has done some really cool stuff with RPA, robotic process automation, and I'm sure now in the AI world as well, you know, even enhancing their capabilities. So, Sarah, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Happy episode. To be here.
Yeah, yeah. Do our listeners a favor and give them a better description of BetterUp.
Sure. BetterUp definitely began. Its roots are in offering digital coaching. We actually own the patent on it. But where we've evolved to, which quite frankly, the market's taken us, is we are what we refer to now as a workforce transformation platform. So you'd be hard-pressed to find an enterprise today that isn't transforming of some sort, digital transformation, operating transformation, M&A related transformation. And through all the process and systems work that comes with those types of large scale changes in organizations, we tend to forget the last component, the human transformation aspect. So we offer a suite of both technology and human in the loop type services that help customers with the what I would call the final frontier of transformation, and that is the workforce transformation. So very cool company. Yes, 6 months out the gate. Feels like it's been 2 years with the pace of growth and change we're about to unleash on the market. So it's been a fun time.
Ooh, let's hear about the change you're about to unleash on the market.
Bearing the lead.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting from this stint in my career, this is only the third company I've worked for. This is also the first blue ocean experience I've had. So we're creating a market. We sell and position things in the market, where there isn't existing budgetary line items. No one feels that they need this. There's not many, if any, competitors that compete at our scale. So a lot of heavy influencing going on and a lot more visioning than I'm used to in my prior roles in companies. So,
well, what I love about the concept of BetterUp, I don't use BetterUp. I have an executive coach and I know her from my last job, and she's been so kind to stick with me through the startup because God only knows I've needed a lot of coaching in the startup.
Yeah. And that's your longest relationship, right, Josh?
And that's my longest relationship, yes, to date. I do have a longstanding relationship with my body pillow, like John, though.
Hallelujah. Praise the Lord.
And but coaching has just been such a godsend. It's like Katarina, if she's listening, has just been it's been everything that I've needed in the company to help me navigate and wayfind through the different directions and key decisions that we need to make. And challenging situations with colleagues and partners and investors and everything. And she's like my closest confidant. And I know for some, you think about coaching and you're like, well, okay, only when I'm at a certain executive level or I have a certain income, can I afford a coach? And I think that's what you guys are trying to democratize, Sarah, at BetterUp, is like, no, you don't have to be the SVP of global customer success to have a personal coach, right? Anybody can have it, and it pays such dividends, is what I'm trying to say. So kudos to you guys for tackling that.
Yeah. Soft and hard benefits. I think we tend to neglect or not even think there is a financial benefit that you could track back to a coached employee or workforce, but you'd be surprised if dug into the data. It's pretty good. And yeah, I think there's what I like about this company is outside of being there's obviously what this could do for enterprise and workforce, but there is a higher order mission for our founders, for the individuals that work here that want to kind of impart and make the world better. And we view pushing this capability through enterprises is like a great way to get a large chunk of the population before who knows what the consumer journey may may play out for us.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, it reminds me a little bit about of Headspace's path of go-to-market. You know, they started out consumer, which may be a little different, but then they had a major play in enterprise as a way to capture, you know, the larger audience.
Yeah.
Sarah, I want to hear kind of the story about you're joining BetterUp. You're 6 months into the leadership role. Tell us a little bit about the process of, you know, you're moving over to BetterUp, what you really kind of came into and what you've been focused on improving or maintaining, what have you, in those past 6 months. And then eventually we'll lead this into a conversation around low touch, tech touch, digital touch, all the digital trends, because I know that's something that's on your priority list right now as we're stepping into 2024.
Sure. Happy so, to.
Yeah. What did you step into when you, what did you find when you came to BetterUp about 6 months ago?
A lot of churn. Not too much, but you know, I think in a, as I called that earlier, this is a, this is blue ocean space. This is not, you know, very few enterprises out there have a recurring budgetary line item for workforce transformation and coaching capabilities. So with that, the barriers to continued adoption is are a lot higher than I have seen in other enterprise SaaS companies. You know, I joined the company late 2023. This technology, this company went bonkers big through COVID, post-COVID, where all of a sudden the mental health and wellness of your employee base became of front and center focus, not just for CHROs, but CEOs. And so we saw the market start to cool and normalize. And hence we started to see churn become a problem. It was not a problem before. So when I came in, like my current state was we had a leaky bucket. We had a singular singular engagement model for customer success. And it was high touch, bespoke, customized, tailored. And when you really dug into what we did, we were doing product support. We were doing consulting. We were doing work that would very clearly categorize as paid services. And, you know, if you think about it, a lot of breadth, you know, in term versus depth, we were generalists to the nth degree. I'd say we were doing a lot of work that could be automated, that should have been done in systems. And then my last and favorite, which I lament with other CS leaders, is we were also the band-aids of all the things that were yet to be configurable features within the platform. So we were like the band-aid around the
traditional customer success then.
Yeah, pretty much. But it was the perfect storm. I'm used to kind of seeing these kind of phased out over time. It was all at once. So it's been a game of focus. Mm-hmm.
Where were your leaky buckets that you were intent on addressing?
Yeah. So one is, I think customers, I didn't realize they bought a renewing product. So, them seeing the renewal quotes was a surprise to them. So that was fun. That's something we can solve commercially upstream. We've seen a lot of programmatic purchases. So, when we sold or we anchored to a business need, it was like a point in time, like campaign or event or program that had an end date. So we saw a lot of churn through that.
Hey, it's peak COVID. There's a lot of stressed out, exhausted employees. We need to do something. And then 6 months later, oh, okay, we're not on that bandwagon anymore.
Yeah. Or, you know, we've got a hypo program that we want to throw some coaching licenses out, but you know, it only runs 6 months out of the year and we don't know if we're even going to do it next year. So, you could have the most successful launch, high engagement, high value ROI, but the program's not a constant.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And so it was interesting as I was staring at the churn and then the other kind of, I would say, leak we had in the bucket had to do with our high touch customer success motion meant we really couldn't touch the bottom third of customers. So these were customers that were like getting talked to when we sold to them and when we were passing over a renewal quote. So naturally churn just due to poor service levels, unengaged, never got off the shelf. So that was the scenario that I walked into. Now, on the flip side, I saw some headwinds. I have never seen higher NPS in my life at a company. Our customers adore us, are so engaged. So I was like, so why are we churning if they love us so much? So it really comes down, I think, of
what was your NPS score?
It was like 75.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And did you have a high response rate? I mean,
anything that's higher than John's GPA.
So like a 36% response rate. And these are like big Fortune 1000 enterprises. Like, you know, this is, you know, they're, so I was
going over that dig, Josh, just moving right past it.
Yeah. So our customers loved us. We have really good mind share at like CHRO level. We've got a lot of executive, not presence, but like reach and penetration to the CHRO office. But something wasn't operationalizing as you got down, downstream in these organizations running on a year-to-year basis. So as it relates to kind of how, you know, I've been wrapping my head around it, those issues or headwinds, the programmatic selling piece, that's things that we were working with, like CS as a partner to sales in terms of how they sell and position differently and maybe tether themselves to other types of programs or business metrics that have a more evergreen presence in the organization versus seasonal. And then as it relates to like service level degradation or, you know, not being able to touch like a third of our customers, that falls squarely in our customer success court. We're not organized to operate at the scale we're at, let alone the scale we want to move on towards.
How many customers do you guys have?
700.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Yep. You know, it's a pretty high touch, I would say, implementation and adoption lifecycle for our customers that I don't know that our customers have truly felt the brunt of. I think our CSMs are carrying a lot of that. Would like to see the product carry more of that. So anyways, you know, my now being 6 months into the gig or after my first 3 months of kind of taking the lay of the land, there was clearly a lot of we could control as far as how we organized work differently, how we partnered with our platform and product team to what I would coin product-led adoption so we can facilitate more of that out of the tool versus manually through our CSMs.
You've referred to that a couple of times, Sarah. First of all, before I forget, what's the size of your team, the size and structure of your team?
So our CS organization includes both your pure play CSMs, of which we have around 25, 26 of those. And then it includes services, of which we have implementation, technical services, and coaching services, as you know, digital coaching is a big piece of our platform.
Okay. Sarah, they're carrying coverage.
Are the services, wait, Josh, I want to ask a question.
She's just waiting.
Christy, we've gone through this before. We've gone through this before. When I speak, it sounds, John explained this to us a couple of weeks ago. It sounds to me like I'm talking first. And when you speak, it sounds to you like you're talking first. But you're always very accusatory of me for speaking over you. Meanwhile, to my perception, you spoke over me.
This is Josh's gaslighting.
I'm ready to answer, Chris.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you. See? Thank you. Sarah, tell me about your services. Are these premium services? Is this pay to play? Are these all complimentary? Are you attaching services to every deal that comes in because of the complexity of it and the change management that's required?
I'd love that. No, none of it. It's a little bit of... It's a mix. Largely unpaid, unpriced services that you know, we've been incubating to start to paywall. So one is, I would say in today's world, even if we had sold services, our customers cannot be 100% autonomous. There mm-hmm. is a requirement for people inside of BetterUp to help them implement, run, extract value from the platform. But our services are, I'd say this year we will see we'll probably see two things. One is formalized pricing and a formalized services menu. So we'll get a lot more organized on that side of the house. The other piece is defining the standard, defining standard versus premium type support, which some of my team members would orient towards. So like, essentially, what's the implementation support that's included in your license cost versus that which is either custom or so complex or so dense in scope that we require to charge a fee for. We also do include some, I would say, consulting services, which are, you don't need it to run and implement the platform, but, you know, given our, we've got a lot of science, our platform's already science backed and we own the patents and we actually have a lot of scientists on the roster. So like our consulting type services are something that are, I would say, value accredited to our clients, but not a necessity to run our platform. So we do some of that as well.
So if you're not selling them, how are you determining who's getting what?
Good question. Still figuring that out. We're selling in the sense we're giving away a lot, but we don't have standard price, I would say price catalogs yet. Maybe if I were to contextualize it, we're just coming off of the phase of growth where it was market share by any means, give them whatever they need. We'll figure out how to price it and account for it separately. I'm coming in to say we need to price and account for it. Even if we're accounting it as 100% discount, we need the paper trail. We need customers to see that there is value associated with they're getting versus feeling it's an entitlement or feeling like they're purchasing that license fee is entitles them to a turnkey type operation. We just haven't had consistent ownership of services. It's been a decentralized background function.
Sarah, you tell me if I'm onto something here. Like, I get the sense that you went from one massive hypergrowth tech company to another, that UiPath was similar, maybe offset a couple of years ago, that they really grew incredibly quickly. And probably it was very similar where it's, hey, this is like, it's a public company, right? So our market, our price is at this, we're growing incredibly quickly, we're raising all this money, et cetera, et cetera. And then now we have to actually get the house in order a little bit to support that growth. And probably it's a little bit of a similar situation where BetterUp has grown so quickly over the past few years, given people's changing mindsets and remote work and all these things. And now it's a little bit of the same. Like, now we actually have to get the house in order.
Exactly. Yeah. It's very much similar growth trajectories. The key difference is UiPath was operating in an established market. There was a lot broader set of learnings you could glean from our other competitors in the marketplace, whereas here we're creating. The other thing I would say is unique is UiPath was automation technology. We were selling into the CIO. They're used to owning and managing platforms. In BetterUp, currently our buyer is the CHRO. And they're not used to consuming platforms and technology and what does it mean to be a platform owner and working with a technology vendor. So I'm trying to lead a customer success organization in an enterprise SaaS world that's treated like a service company. So it's a very different customer persona, which is causing me to rethink and not just immediately reapply the learnings of the past. If I want to evolve the customer success function, I need to evolve my customers to think of themselves not as like a vendor manager or a service manager, but as a platform owner. They don't identify as that today. So yeah.
Sarah, it's interesting because, so I work for a company called User Testing. I'm not sure if we went over that in the intro, but we're very much, while we're in a different space, it's a similar customer base, right? We work with user researchers and research departments that just don't, like, they're used to just sitting in a lab and talking to people. And we're having this day in and day out, these conversations of like, treat us like a partner. And they're like, but you're a service provider. Like, we just signed you a check and you give us insights. Like, and it's actually the last 2 years of my life has been really, really focused on this transition as well within my brain of how, like, our folks don't talk ROI. There's no direct revenue application. There's no way to say you have saved X or done Y because that money doesn't even go to them, right? It's like four levels above, right? And what I found interesting about the prep docs that we kind of got is this transition into like the mid touch, I think, or low touch, but still like human led, right? We talk about tech touch. Let's talk about platforms, but I think a lot of people just expect it to be Oh, just send an email instead of getting on a QBR or whatever it is, yeah. Right? Like, I would love to hear kind of where you're at with, I know you're leading into it. This isn't anything that is defined. But one of the things that we did talk about earlier was just, it's not just the people or the process. Like, it is also the way that our customers interact. And then a lot of these companies are built with product-led in mind, right? So they're kind of there already. How do you get that transition internally when you have an organization that is really, really high touch, where customers are like, hey, I can call Mark whenever I want to. Right. And they're going to give me an answer. Two, I'm going to get the same value, but in a different way.
No, it's a good prompt. The way I'm thinking about low-touch customer success is the first wave of this is augmenting the CSM, not replacing them. So I do not see, I am not signing up for the hell of change management to go from the highest touch CSM who I can text and call and invite to my kids' birthday parties to, I'm interfacing with a chat bot or a general web interest form, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, my first thing is, for one, it's like, I need to enable my CSMs to enable their customers as if they're platform owners and not just saying yes to everything. So we are definitely in the phase of, we say yes, if we can do it, we will do it, versus should we do it, or should we, you know, should we do it for the customer or on behalf of them, or should we take the time to teach them and lead them through it? So I'm using this analogy with the team is like, this year we're evolving from the Sherpas carrying the customer's junk up the mountain and doing it for them versus we're training them before the climb. And we're there to join them on the climb to make sure they don't fall, or if they need help or reinforce coaching, we're going to take them up. So it's really, first is like driving the mindset shift of my CSMs.
Yeah.
You don't have to be the hero, save the day, say yes to everything. And you need to, and before we can ask our customers to change, you need to shift your mindset from that of the doer to like in the Sherpa to the enabler and the coach. So that's like at a very basic cultural level, mindset level, like that's part one. Secondly, is we haven't really designed or equipped our CSMs with tools that are customer facing. Like we give the CSMs playbooks and SOPs that it speaks to them to do the work. I'm like, no, these should all be customer facing and written through the, you know, for the reader being a customer, not a CSM. So right. We need to even rethink our building of collateral assets. Infrastructure for customer success should only be built with the customer as the end user, not the CSM. We're not a service.
Don't create one of those like community things where people get points for adding a forum comment. Just as long as we're on the same page with that, Sarah,
I wish that was my problem. We were that far.
Okay.
I would love a public facing website with some information that the customers could get. So
I got a guy.
The third piece is start to think through our self-service strategy where it's not like the customer will only have that, but rather than a CSM dumpster diving through a Google Drive or their desktop, why don't I point you to this great resource that you can intuitively find, look for what you're looking for or find what you're looking for. Mindset shift, which is a cultural change for customer success as a function here, designing with the customer as the end consumer of playbooks, SOPs, guides. And then third is like start moving on a self-service strategy where customers can start to learn how to, you know, at least have a place to go to fulfill their needs. Today they have nothing. So of course we create the bottleneck with the CSM.
What's the impact that you're feeling with your CSMs right now, knowing that they're looking at augmentation, as you call it, this year, and then potential change the year after that, right? We live in a wacky economy. Yeah. How are you communicating this with your team so that it isn't the big scary boss coming in and saying, I'm changing everything? And more, I hear your pain. I hear your stress. You're burnt out. And this is a solution.
They're begging for it. So there is a, good. So that's
okay.
One is
check that box.
Yeah, no, there's, you know, to be straight, like a lot of enterprise SaaS companies over the last year, we went through our few rounds of layoffs and the CS organization was not exempt from those. But the workload continues to increase. So the team is begging for capacity relief. And because hiring is not the lever I can pull right now, the lever is how do we operate more efficiently and effectively in introducing low-touch motions, such as self-service, more customer-facing guides, giving CSMs the air cover and leadership support to say you can push back and teach them versus do for them is, I think, permission they've been waiting to have given to them. So, you know, I would say there's, you know, on one side, a very high appetite and demand, quite frankly, for introducing these type of low touch models. But there is a, whether it's conscious or not, there's absolutely resistance from moving from the bespoke, I'm the hero, I can exert all this creativity in what I do for my customers to standard vanilla, you know, and that is more cultural change management we'll have to work with, and also reserve and understand that there's going to be customers that deserve the white glove concierge, I just wrote this plan just for you type treatment versus those that get the off the shelf version. So I'm starting to see hints of that hesitation to moving more towards the standard, but quite frankly, for good or for worse, like if for bad, the size of the workloads these CSMs are having are kind of like forcing them to want to adopt more towards the standard because it's the only way forward for some of them to be able to.
What's Sarah, what's the number one, like very concretely, the number one task you would love to see set into UiPath and automated for your CSMs?
Number one on my list this year is like I have a set of these 10 or so features that need to go into our platform. Like that amounts to a high percentage of work for our CSMs that require the lowest amount of brain power. So I want to take the stuff that I'm paying the highest hourly rate for that is, you know, non-differentiating in the eyes of the customer. So that is number one, is just embed stuff in the platform. And in this case was just accelerating and building the business case to get this done next quarter versus next year.
Yeah.
So that was the biggest to start clearing room. And then on the low touch like truly on the low touch model, the first thing I would prioritize is one to many programming, meaning like webinars, newsletters. I mean, we're talking really low lift stuff that have immediate gratification, immediate application, and every CSM could use it, whether you have a small 50K customer or you got a 5 million customer. So everybody is broadly applicable, low cost to implement, high range of impact or impressions you can drive off of it. Like it's a quick win. And it also starts to, I think, show the team art of the possible. You don't have to be afraid of low touch. This stuff is great. It's going to augment you, not replace you. So.
Sarah, we didn't mention it, but we actually get our revenue for this podcast from being a lead gen platform to tools that we can. So we now know the number one tool that's on your list if you're an LMS or you're helping to broadcast webinar content. Context, Sarah. I'm joking. Don't context.
Oh, Sarah. I'm not using my free Zoom account that turns off after 40 minutes.
It's the worst.
It's also the cheapest. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, this was awesome. Thank you so much for sharing all that. I you know, not to just like recap everything, but I really like the way that you're thinking about this. This transition is so important to what so many people are going through right now. I'm sure that there's going to be a bunch of people that have a ton of other questions too. It's something that we're going through as well. This move from like super high touch to holy shit, we have so much to do. We can't do it anymore. And I really like the way that you framed it. It's like, you know, CSMs are kind of trained to be the superhero. They're just like, they're always the ones that save the day, right? And I think that's okay within reason. But that transition is a cultural shift that I'm really interested to hear like 6 months from now or a year from now when you kind of come out the other end. So we're definitely going to be like having some follow-up on that.
Yeah, I'm excited about it because the more we can, we're less diluted as a function, meaning superhero, you do everything. When it's time to articulate your impact, your worth to the organization, it's hard to do that when you're like, I do 15 different things. And they're like, wait, what? You know, versus I do these three things. This is how it influences revenue or GRR. Oh. And And I can certify, like, my team is doing work that's appropriate for the hourly rate we're paying for. Not that they're hourly, but, you know, if I were to distill their average salaries to hourly rates, like, this is work we should be doing with knowledge workers of this caliber. And we owe that to our teams. I don't know who wants to stay to do busy, low value work. That is, you know, that's not why they joined the function.
I love that. That's such a great perspective.
Hey, Sarah, did you know what you were walking into?
That's the other question.
Yeah. I always
I have to ask that.
Yeah, no, I did. I was really ready for a change. I loved UiPath. I still say we for UiPath, but 6 years is like, it felt like 12 years. It's dog years there. The company changed and grew a ton. And I was interested in playing my hand with a global scope. And then the customer success at BetterUp included services and incubating this services function. So this was a more personal calling. So I was made very aware of like the challenges, but the things that are going for this company are far outweigh the operational challenges, which I view as controllable and solvable, whether within CS or working in partnership with our sales teams. So, but the higher order mission of helping people live with greater purpose and clarity, the mind share we have with CHROs, and cross our fingers, like truly create and define a category and then lead said category would be a really great chapter I'd love to see come to fruition. But obviously the best chapters have the highest cost. So let's see where I am a year from now.
Well, I love it. If I had money, I'd invest today, because I think you guys are in the right space. Like you said, you've established your market category leadership. Yeah, but like the sky's the limit, and it's going to be fun in quotation marks. It's going to be fun, all the opportunity you have to really kind of help the company soar to greater heights. So thank you for taking the time amongst your very busy schedule. Thank you for taking the time to chat with us.
Of course. No, happy to do these, and thank you for inviting me.
Thanks, guys.